And welcome to this week's Weekly Yes And Podcast. I'm your host, Travis Thomas. I'm the host of the Weekly Yap, as well as the creator of Live Yes And. For those of you who are new to the Weekly Yes And Podcast, Live Yes And is all about helping individuals, companies, and teams discover their inner brilliance through a commitment to purpose, authenticity, and life-transforming collaboration. So the Weekly Yes And Podcast, I get to talk to some of the most interesting people, some of the top minds in their fields, of what it means to have a Yes And mindset, what it means to deal with adversity, to deal with challenges, to live a life of purpose, and to live your yes, and how you overcome all of those challenges, all that adversity, and what it takes to do that. So I'm so excited. I'm blessed to get to meet the people that I get to meet, and so grateful for all the new friends I have made along the way, including today's guest, who is Dr. Rob Bell. And Dr. Rob Bell is one of the top sports psychologists in the country. He's a mental toughness coach. He has caddied on the PGA Tour for over 20 events. He's worked with some of the top athletes, some of the top coaches in the country. He's been featured on ESPN, the Golf Channel, Runner's World, and he is the author of a couple of very cool books. One is called The Hinge, and the other one for parents is called Don't Should on Your Kids. And now, how great is that title? Don't Should on Your Kids. And so Rob was fantastic enough to take a little time a few weeks ago to sit down and talk to me and share some of his knowledge and inspiration on the Weekly Yes And Podcast. And I realize that as this podcast is coming out for all of you NCAA March Madness fans, we have the Final Four is set. And for all of you golf fans, the Masters is coming up here really soon. So what an amazing guy to talk about dealing with pressure, to talk about mindset, and especially for you parents out there, of how we can communicate and treat our kids better when it comes to nurturing a high-performance mindset as a parent. So without further ado, let's get into this week's Weekly Yap Podcast with Dr. Rob Bell. And hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's Weekly Yap, the Yes And Podcast. My name is Travis Thomas, and so grateful and excited to have our guest on today. His name is Dr. Rob Bell. He is an Indianapolis sports psychologist, book author, and has just worked with some of the top athletes, some of the top coaches in the country, if not the world, and actually has a new book out, which I would love to jump into that, Rob, right away. But Rob, thanks so much for taking the time.
Yes, and I'm excited to be here. Really excited.
Thanks, Rob. And so the new book is called Don't Should on Your Kids. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, we can't say the title three times fast.
So tell me about the book, Rob. I think a few years ago, I had heard, I was in a leadership conference, and I had heard someone mention that kind of the similar idea, like, don't should on me. And I've loved that because I've always loved that idea of, you know, we're really good at telling people what they should do. And so when I saw that title, especially for kids, I just knew it'd be a fantastic book. So tell us, what was your inspiration behind it?
Sure. I mean, there's like really a couple stories that went into it, but you know, I was at a couple collegiate events, and these are collegiate events. I mean, these aren't athletes that are going to be going professional. I even write about it in the book. I say we don't talk about professional athletics for one reason, and that's because if parents knew, one, how good you had to be, and then how much work it took to be a professional athlete, they'd never ever sign up.
Yeah.
But I'm at a couple of collegiate events, and I just see parents that are just stressed out, and it just didn't make sense. I'm like, you know, they're getting a great education, like, so they're not playing their best, you know, so what? And they were just stressed out, and it just really dawned on me that even parents, about how vicarious that they're living through their kids, and I mean, I'm a parent myself. I think, you know, parenting is so difficult. I wanted to write it, you know, not to down parents, but to give them skills that, you know, help them empower their kids and just really help their kids out. And, you know, and we talked to over 100 coaches for this book, and we just got so many great ideas on what parents could be doing a little bit different and things that they should not be doing. And that's number one, not shooting on their kids. So we take an adult viewpoint and we impose it on our kids instead of letting them experience it themselves. And it makes sense, but, you know, we're trying to clear the path for them. But when we clear the path, they don't build mental toughness that way. We're like a snowplow parent.
And, yeah.
It's just not how we get mentally tough.
Right. And so it's interesting right now. I'm working with a soccer club down here in Florida. It's a fantastic club. And, you know, I get to work with the kids, you know, at least once a month and just doing some leadership and some mental skill development with them. But the thing that we're starting to do more of now is parent workshops. And actually, I had a parent workshop last night and I'm doing another one tonight. And really kind of trying to share some of these same ideas with parents. And so when you, with your experience working with parents, is there one commonality or is there one idea that you feel like you want to share most when you're working with parents?
I mean, there's a lot of ideas I want to share. The commonality is a good point. I think, number one, I just think as parents, I'll put myself in that, we emphasize winning and rankings and statistics over the development and the long-term development. So in doing so, what we've done is we have maximized the short term. And when we do that, we live and we die on the outcome. And we've minimized the long term. And I really make this point clear is that sport is going to emphasize and it's going to teach whatever we want it to teach. And that, I mean, that's the part that I just absolutely love about sports and athletics is this is the time that we're going to learn about setting goals, about focus, about how to handle defeat and failure. And the one skill that I think is going to last way beyond what sport is over, and that is persistence and the tenacity. And I think we overvalue talent so much when I think tenacity is more important than talent. And that's one common theme. And then there are a couple of themes, you know, a couple of techniques with parents on just how we approach talking and having a conversation with our kids. And about being a parent first and allowing the coaches, I think, to be the coaches.
Sure.
Good or bad.
Right.
And that's definitely key.
And when it comes to those conversations with the kids from a parent's perspective, I know one thing we were talking about to the parents last night, I read a great article about parents, you know, basically, you know, not trapping your kid in the car after a game or a contest and forcing them to talk about the match or talk about the game. You know, do you have one or two ideas that the parents, you know, can do, especially like after a competition that is a more effective way to talk to their child?
Yeah, just to dovetail on that, a big section in the book is called The Car Ride Home.
Oh, fantastic.
And we talk about anything but the game, or even nowadays, the practice on the car ride home. And even if the kids are going to want to drag the parents kind of into it, we refuse to talk about it. We'll talk about anything but. But what we will do is we'll set up a time when we get home that we are all de-stressed, decompressed, and really what happens then is a better conversation. So parents are so upset because they're not getting any feedback from their kids. Well, they're going to get feedback from them because we're not going to be drilling them on the car ride home. And you know, a funny thing that happens is we, as parents, may have so many good points that we want to say, and this has happened to me, that I'll get home. You know what? I totally forgot what I wanted to say. I mean, I had a great point, and then I forgot it. And you know what? It really must not have been that important. And I just think the conversation is just so much better. On the car ride home, it's not the time to talk about it.
Right. When it's still so fresh, it's still so raw. You know, there's still there's emotions there from both parties. And I'm right there with you. It's funny, you know. I try to teach these ideas and I teach these principles, but I get sucked into it being a parent. You know, just like anyone else. And I remember my daughter's almost 14, and she's still playing, you know, with a club soccer team. And a couple years ago, she finally just sat my wife and I down and said, "Listen, I don't want to talk about the game. And Dad, I know you're a college soccer player. I don't want your advice." And she basically said, "I just want you guys to show up, cheer me on, be supportive, and then just leave it alone." And that was a very sort of sobering conversation to have, but so, so helpful and effective moving forward.
Yeah, that's a great story. So I should have talked to you before before the book was out. I would put that in there.
Next time, I'm sure you'll have another opportunity, Rob.
Yeah, but it's so true, because we've got to allow it to be about the kids and not about us. And I think when we take that mentality that it's not about us, you can even see it in the stands. I mean, the parents are more relaxed. You know, it's about them. It's just about being encouraging and supportive, not vicarious.
Right. Right. You know, kind of diving back into the youth sports world here these last few years, you know, it's you know, we always hear these horrific events of parents getting into fights and these awful things happening. I'm almost surprised, spending more time now at youth events, that it actually doesn't happen more than it does, because of how emotionally charged the sidelines are. And so for you, from helping a parent out, helping a parent on the sideline, do you have a tip or two that you could give to a parent just to help them kind of maintain maybe a sense of perspective or a sense of poise in that emotionally charged environment?
Yeah, it's a great point, because I think parents don't even think that, number one, they're going to hear the parent's voice. They're going to hear the parent's voice. There could be 2,000 people in the stands yelling and screaming, and the one thing they hear, shoot it. And if they're dad, they can hear that.
Yeah.
And it's so funny. I mean, that's just the animal instincts. I mean, that's the nature. So one of the things that we actually have that my wife and I impose is we don't cheer for a kid. I don't want them listening to our voice. I want them listening to the coach's voice. That's the only voice they should be listening to.
Yeah.
But the other thing then with parents is cheer for other kids. Cheer for the other the other players, and not just for your own kid. I think the kids want that. And that was actually from, one of the coaches contributed to that. Like, look, you can cheer on your son, your daughter, that's great, but cheer on the whole team and cheer on other players as well. And your kid's going to really enjoy that. And we talk about riding the carousel rather than the roller coaster. We cannot ride the emotions of winning and losing, because, you know, I've caddied on the PGA Tour, and you can't do that as a caddy. You can't live and die on how your player is doing. You've got to remain cool, calm, and collected, and that's riding the carousel. That's not going up and down, up and down. That's
yeah.
Really just staying even keel.
I love
that's
that.
That's where great parenting takes place.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, and I love that analogy. Well, Rob, to talk a little bit about, again, your professional experience as well. Again, you've been a PGA Tour caddy, carrying the bag for guys, and you've worked with some of the top athletes and coaches sort of in the world. What was it for you that that got you inspired to want to do this line of work?
There were quite a few factors, actually. I mean, one, you know, as myself playing baseball, I would think way too much playing baseball. I was a streaky player. You know, I could be hot one minute and then cold the next. And I never understood why. No one could ever help me. And where if I would play soccer or, you know, an endurance event, I never thought that, you know, during that time. And no one could ever really help. But there was this... the reason why I got into the field is I started following the gold medalist in 1996 Olympics, Dan O'Brien. And the reason why I started following him, because he, there's no better verbiage than this, but he choked at the 92 Olympic trials.
Yes.
And he started to see a sports psychologist and to help him with his routine, help him with the improv, right?
Yes.
And how to, you know, keep, you know, better emotional control. And I had no idea about that field. And I started following his career. And then when he won the gold medal, I was like, that's what I'm going to do with my life. And I've never looked back. It's the only thing that I've really been so good at and yet so passionate about at the same time. And I absolutely love what I do. I think I have the most fantastic job in the world. And then, you know, it depending on where I'm at, sometimes I have the best office in the world. It's going to be at the Masters or at the Tennis event. Those are great offices.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is. I mean, it's so much better when your athletes do well, but it's so rewarding. And people ask, I get the same amount of joy if it's going to be some, you know, high school athlete winning a state championship as opposed to if it's going to be a tennis player winning a pro event or, you know, a basketball team, you know, winning their conference tournament. I want everybody to experience that fist pump moment, that hinge moment. I don't think there's a better feeling in the world.
And you actually mentioned that hinge moment, which is another one of your books. Share a little bit about what someone would expect to find from your book, The Hinge.
Right. We need to do a great job leading that in. That's perfect. What I have found, it was probably, I borrow so many different ideas. And this is, I don't know if this is a novel idea, but I said, look, every door has a hinge. And a door without a hinge is a wall. Like, it just doesn't work. And the reason why is what the hinge was, it was that one moment, that one play, or sometimes even that one person that makes all the difference in our lives. And it really connects who we are with who we're going to become. And here's the thing is we just don't know when that moment or that person is coming. If we can't connect the dots moving forward in life, we can only connect them looking backwards, seeing the significance of that one play. And that's what I found is that, just specifically with athletics, games are lost more than they are won. And you can go back and you can look, that one play made all the difference. And we just didn't know it at the time. And if we go back and we look, I'm always looking for somebody's hinge moment. Like what? And people can call it different things, big break, stuff like that. But I say it's a hinge because it does. It connects who they are with who they become. And the one part that I can always get back to is this. It does not matter how bad someone has messed up or how they are struggling right now. It just takes one. Hmm. That's all it takes. It takes one play to turn everything around. It takes one game to turn a whole season around. And that is the truth. Even looking at a team from this year, they're playing in their conference championship tonight. They started off the year 0-5.
Yeah.
One game turnaround for them. And that's what we're always getting ready for, that one moment.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was just doing an interview yesterday with a former professional basketball player. His name's Trevor Huffman. He played in Europe for 13 years. He played at Kent State. He took his team to 3 NCAA tournaments. Made it to the final eight back in 2002, I believe. And I knew Trevor growing up, and we were talking yesterday, and he was a kid who barely got a scholarship. And his freshman year, he was sitting on the end of the bench. He said, I barely played the first few games. And then we found ourselves at an away game pretty early in the season. And the starters were playing so terribly that the coach benched all the starters. And so he got in the second half. They were down 18, he and another guy. And they just lit up. They just lit up the court. They lit up the scoreboard. They came all the way back. They won the game. He had like 20 points in 18 minutes, the game-winning assist. And when you talk about that hinge moment, it's interesting because for him, that was that hinge moment. He went on to be the conference freshman of the year from that point, and then just had such a storied career after that. But it's interesting how to think about that, how it's kind of fun from one respect that we're always kind of just a moment away from things changing.
Without a doubt. And sometimes, if we look at our lives, that one person that makes all the difference in our lives. And that's a great example, because I think that's it. And that's the importance of our preparation and just giving ourselves as many opportunities as we can, because it is going to connect. We just don't know what it's going to look like.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Rob, for those people who are listening to the podcast and they hear the titles mental conditioning coach, they hear sports psychology, and so and as much as it's becoming more popular, it's still there's still a lot of misconceptions out there, and there's still a lot of confusion over what that all means. And so when someone asks you sort of what you do and what you do for teams and what you do for athletes, how do you describe your field?
Yeah, I work with athletes, coaches, and teams on mental toughness, and that is helping them play their best when it matters most. And then the other part is how to handle, how to cope, and how to deal with that adversity, that struggle. And it's not a matter of if these things are going to happen. It's just a matter of when.
Right.
And in all performance, there's going to be pressure moments. There's going to be have-to moments. And I say it like this. When our opportunity hits, it's too late to prepare. And what I have seen about the best is they don't hope that they're just going to be ready. They know that they're going to be ready. And there's just such a huge mental component with that and mental toughness that that's basically what I do.
That's great. You know, I was watching one of your videos yesterday, Rob, and you were talking about excitement and nervousness and how essentially physiologically they're the same thing. They're just two different perspectives on the same thing. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, the difference, and I try to explain it. And even, you know, what's the difference between being nervous or being excited? And physiologically, it's the same exact thing. I mean, your palms are going to get a little bit sweaty. Your mind's going to start racing a little bit. You just feel different. Even when they're waking up on game day, you feel different. And the difference between being nervous and excited is, am I looking at this as an opportunity? Something good can happen. I want to be here. Or am I looking at it as, man, something bad can happen. I can screw up. I don't want to be in this situation. And that's how we can train our mind. We look at everything like we don't have to, we get to. But wanting to be in that pressure situation, I want the ball in my hands and not stress out about the outcome so much. We're just so focused on the process. And that's the big difference between being nervous or being excited. Looking at everything as an opportunity rather than a threat. And you know when this one really clicked for me, Travis, was this, is every year I'll watch Nolan Ryan's seventh no-hitter. And when he gets near finishing, I mean, I know how it works out, right? He throws the no-hitter. He wins.
Yeah.
And I imagine that I'm the shortstop, and I still get a little bit nervous because I start thinking in my head, all right, don't hit it to me, right? If I'm the shortstop, like, don't hit it to me. And then I was wondering, I was like, why am I thinking that way? And it's all about, you know, how do we, man, I want the ball hit to me. I want to be in this situation because something good can happen. And that's where I think we train our mind to think that way.
Interesting. Yeah, I love that. I love that approach. And one thing I know the club that I'm working with, the one thing we're really trying to get the kids and now the parents too, right, is to embrace this idea of failure and, you know, seeing failure as a learning tool, if not the most effective learning tool, and being able to, you know, grow and have a growth mindset and all of that. And watching your video yesterday, now you have another book that's called No Fear, correct?
Yes, that was my third book on mental toughness.
And so I was watching your video yesterday on No Fear, which was really fun to watch. And you shared this.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Now you shared a very humbling story. I hope I'm not, you know, bringing up a sore wound, but you shared when you were caddying a bag and you accidentally picked up the wrong ball out of the bag.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you what, you talk about every time you watch that Nolan Ryan video that you're nervous for the shortstop. I mean, my heart sank just listening to you share that experience of what that just had to feel like for you in that situation. Can you tell that story again? It's such a great story.
Absolutely. And I tell it because I think our test becomes our testimony.
Yes.
And so I'm caddying my very first event, and the golfer I'm working with is playing really, really well. And you know, I only caddied for guys that I would work with on the mental game, and this was really one of my first clients. And he's playing so well that on the second day of this tournament, he is in first place. We're looking up at the leaderboard, and what happens is the moment overcomes me. I'm thinking in my head, Travis, that I'm the best sports psychologist that there is. This is 2006. You know, I'm obviously the best caddy that there is. Like, this is a piece of cake. Like, his name was on the leaderboard. I thought it was my name on the leaderboard. Like, I really thought it was me. So I totally get caught up in the moment. And what he does is we're on the ninth green. We have nine more holes to go in this day, and I'm already chalking up my head that we won. And he tosses me the ball, and when I'm cleaning the ball drops in the bag. And I just reach out, I grab the ball, and I toss it to him. He makes the putt. We're walking onto the 10th tee box. Nine more holes to go in this day. And it was one of those moments that really just dread overcame me, and I stopped and I asked, and I said that was a Callaway 2 blue circle, right? And he wants to know even why I'm asking him. It's a Callaway 4 blue circle, and what had happened was I had handed him the wrong golf ball. And in the moment of golf is you call all penalties on yourself. Like golf, there is no cheating, there is no trying. That's not that kind of sport.
Right.
We call the rules official over. That's a 2-shot penalty. And I've lost games before. Like I've had a ball go through my legs, you know, playing, and I've never felt as small and as insignificant at that moment in my life. Like what I really wanted to do was set the bag down. I was going to go in the parking lot, and I was really just going to kill myself because it couldn't get any worse than that. Like the thoughts that were going through my head about how could you be so stupid? Like, you know, it went from feeling that I'm the absolute best that I'm the absolute worst. And the thoughts that were in my head for the next 45 minutes were so demeaning, like, so awful. And he stops me then on the 14th tee box and looks at me and says, Rob, says, look, I need you. He says, we're going to get that shot back, but either you can't do this mental game stuff you talk about or you don't believe it. But he said, I need you.
Yeah.
And it really, it taught me about the power of responding, don't reacting. And someone, you know, I had a person in my life that told me after that round that said, look, if that's the worst you have it in your life, it's not going to be that bad, man.
Right.
And what I think we need to do is we just need to share about our low moments because we can see how our experience can benefit others and how our test becomes our testimony, how, you know, our mess has to become our message. And wherever I talk to, that's the story always comes up. People don't want to hear about the successes. They want to hear about the failure. So that's what I lead with. I lead with my worst foot forward and saying, look, man, I get it. And it sucks going through it at the moment. It really does. But it's only coming out of that that we see that, look, we got better.
Right.
You know, I wouldn't change it now because it was a good thing that happened. And people always ask, sometimes I forget, how did you finish that tournament? And we did. We finished second that week, but it was by 3 shots. So that 1 shot never even came up to really sting us. But, and people ask all the time, well, I can't tell you the bags are not heavy. They aren't heavy when you're shooting 66. And that's it, right, Travis? It's like we shot 66.
Yeah, yeah.
He shot 74. And that's when the bags get really heavy, and that's when the mental toughness kicks in, is when things are going bad. How do we respond?
Right, right. Oh, that's fantastic. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so all of these years, Rob, working with different athletes in different fields and different sports, from individual sports to team sports, is there anything unique sort of that is different from sport to sport, or at the end of the day is just performance performance?
I think there are common themes that are universal across all sports, and that's going to be, you know, motivation, tenacity, the persistence, all that grouped into motivation, and then your confidence and your focus. And then what I see as the second most important mental skill is our ability to refocus. I think those are common throughout all sports. And then I just think what we have is the intricacies that go along with, you know, is this going to be a team sport and an individual sport? Do we have an opponent or do we not have an opponent? You know, and then what's the communication like, the leadership, and all those little intricacies of sports are what beautiful about sports is, you know, a lot of times, hopefully, you know, we don't get to pick our sport. Our sport picks us because we just love it so much. And that is, it's just fun to play and we love playing.
Yeah.
And we can get better at it. And those, I really think those mental skills are common across all sports. It's just how they come about, you know, is a little bit different for each and every athlete.
And when you're working with an athlete, what is the starting point for you? What are you trying to assess as far as how you're going to, you know, what are you going to address first? Or is there a universal starting point when you're working with someone?
Absolutely. And the universal starting point is this, is why do you play?
Yeah.
Why do you play? What I've noticed is that our why changes throughout time. Why you started playing is not necessarily why you're playing right now. And if we are not in touch with our why, and I say, look, our why can always be different, but our why has to make us cry. If it doesn't, it's not our why. It's not deep enough because it's going to get tough. Or is your why strong enough to withstand that pressure? And are you in touch with it? That's always the starting point.
That's fantastic. And for you, Rob, how would you describe your why as far as you doing what you do?
I want every athlete, every team, and every coach that I work with to have that fist pump moment. I want them to experience that. I always say it like this is, you know, they're going to be crying at the end. You really are. And are those going to be tears because it didn't work out, or are those going to be tears because it did work out? You know how much you sacrificed and effort you put into it. That's the real beauty about it. I want every athlete that I work with to experience that hinge moment. And boy, that's why I do what I do. I don't think there's a better feeling in the world. And you know, it's a little bit superficial even when you think about it, because that feeling wears off. But you're still going to have that memory. And as long as we keep giving ourselves opportunities, it's going to work out. My firm belief is that it always works out in the end. You know, if it hasn't, it's just not the end. And I want everybody to experience that feeling.
That's fantastic. And so now, Rob, you're married. You've got a few kids. And so how has your profession sort of helped you as a spouse and as a parent?
Well, now we get into the tough questions, right, Travis?
I'm interviewing your wife next.
I think what we have on our table, and this is just one of the techniques. I mean, but you know, obviously, it's not about us, and that's the key. Like, look, it's not about me. And I think when we take that attitude, when we help enough people get to where they want to go, we reach our goals. That's how we reach it. And I'm in the field that we're trying to do that. I don't know if my kids like it or don't like it, but I'm showing them motivational videos all the time. You know, I'm showing them videos of people that have struggled and letting them know that it's not about the setback. It's about the comeback. And look, there's going to be fights. There's going to be tough times, but it's how we respond to it. And I need reminded of that. I need my kids, my wife to remind me of that constantly. So, like, one of the things that we have on our table is we have a gratitude jar, and we write something that a family member did that we are just grateful for. You know, was it making dinner? Was it doing the dishes? Was it taking out the trash? Little things, because I think when we can start to enjoy the mundane, that's where real joy is in life. And those are just some of the things. I mean, we've got to be a product of the product, and just, I think the more and more that we count our blessings, it's really, really tough to stop. And people say an attitude of gratitude. I just think it's an action of gratitude. I think it's a skill, something that we have to do on a consistent basis. So there's like one of the things that we do, like, you know, as a family. I think that builds mental toughness.
That's fantastic. And so moving forward, Rob, when you look at sort of the next few years, or next, you know, 5-10 years professionally, is there a specific direction that you're wanting to move in? What would be your bigger goal for yourself?
Well, I always have as my goal, I've had athletes that have won at the best stage. I want a major champion. That's one of my goals, is to have a major champion. And we have it where, I just think that's really just one of the huge goals that we have. And the other one is to impact, you know, enough coaches and teams and athletes' lives that they get better because we have worked with them, and they get better because they've interacted with us, and as a result, we've gotten better. That's the goal. Do I have an exact number on it? No, I don't. I just try to set really short-term goals and to have that vision. I've got that vision that we've got in there, and I think it's keeping that clear. With the more and more people that we impact, I think lives get better.
Yeah. Well, Rob, this has been super helpful to me. This has been super inspiring. Again, I can't wait to share this with the audience that is actually listening right now. And I'm absolutely going to post links to your site and as well as the books and all of that. Is there anywhere else on social media that you would like people to follow you?
Well, always Twitter. I love Twitter. It's the outlet for the ADD and all the writing. you know, my Twitter is at Dr. Rob Bell, and of course at the website is drrobbell.com.
Excellent. Rob, well, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Take care, and to all of you listening, have a wonderful Yes and Day.
And there you have it, episode 28. Thanks so much to Dr. Rob Bell for doing that podcast. And make sure you check out the links to find his two books as well as Dr. Bell's website as well. So thank you so much, everyone. Make sure you check me out. I am www.liveyesand.com. You can follow me on social media at liveyesand, as well as every day I do an insight or an inspiration on Periscope. So you can follow me at liveyesand there as well. And again, always be in touch if you're interested in any one-on-one personal coaching, performance coaching, or a team or corporate event. I would love to help you out. So there it is, everyone. Episode 28 of the Weekly Yap. Have a great Yes and Day.